He's a proper gentleman, that man. His name is Zulf.
Who are you, Wraith? What do you want with me?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Friend Request, a podcast where we talk about relationships in video games. I'm Colin Detmar with Scanline Media.
And I'm Jennifer Uncle, also from Scanline Media. So today we have two pretty different relationships. Mine's more of the kind that we tend to do pretty often, and Colin's is a bit different this time, so we figured we would go ahead and start with mine for now.
Yeah, because, like, so far we've done a lot of, like, little, like, you know, just, like, two people and how they know each other, right? But relationships are bigger than that, and originally that was the idea of the podcast, is we tackle relationships of all sorts, and we've had a pretty singular focus, but we're going to see if we can broaden it a bit more now, so.
For sure.
Please, take it away.
So, I've decided to talk about, the Kid and Zulf from Bastion. They're two pretty pivotal characters the Kid, obviously, because he's the protagonist, but, Zulf kind of has an interesting history to him. Like, when you first end up getting to the Bastion and, sort of meeting up with everyone, well, once you find everyone, you kind of find these two key characters. There's Zia, who's this character who lived within the ruins of what you basically call Bastion now. And there's also Zulf, who was kind of on the opposing side, called the Ura, who both those sides tended to fight pretty often, but now that everything has kind of gone to hell, they've kind of muddled out at least a little bit. At some point, Zulf kind of figures out that the Bastion itself was built by Zia's dad, who essentially made it as a weapon to destroy the Ura after being forced into, more or less, while also taking out some of the main city itself. So you kind of have this character who goes from more or less an ally that is helping around to someone who destroys the Bastion pretty hard and ends up running back to the Ura and planning to more or less get in your way most of the time. So you have this character that kind of fluctuates at first from being your ally to your enemy, but when you finally get to him again, finally meet him again, which you kind of understand where he's coming from because you were inhabiting the weapon that more or less ended a lot of his comrades, more or less, and ruined most of the land.
Yeah, there's sort of a reveal where, like, for most of the game, it's just sort of assumed that, like, no one really knows why this apocalypse happened and why everything went to shit. And Zulf figures out first, and then you figure out second, like, oh no, this was on purpose. This was a super weapon gone wrong, trying to kill his people.
More or less. And when you finally kind of hack and slash your way back to the Ura base where he's kind of hiding out, the really tragic part is basically the rest of his kin decide that he's more or less responsible for setting the Kid on them, and they end up beating him within an inch of his life. And I don't know if anyone left him, which I don't think you should have left him, but if you end up taking him home, you basically have to drop all of your weapons and basically walk him back to the Bastion home while he sings this sad song that's basically talking about how happy he is to finally see his family again. And it's this really incredible, touching moment that this whole interaction between you, Zulf, and his family, who have basically turned into his enemy. I think it was the first time I've ever played a game where I ended up just crying pretty hard, because you're just kind of overwhelmed with the sense that this person who was once your enemy, I was once your friend, then turned into your enemy, is now betrayed by the people he loved the most, and that's how he comes back to you, more or less, or that's how you bring him back to you in this state where he's just gone through so much as a person, and you just want to be there for him, more or less, and help him get wherever he needs to go, and just care for him, more or less.
Yeah, I don't think that's exactly where I was mentally with that. It was kind of like, I mean, I did walk him out of there, but for me it was kind of like, look, like, I don't know, there was sort of this begrudging, like, look, we're not friends. I'm helping you out of here because I don't think you deserve what's happened to you, and you have a right to be angry, but, like, you got problems, and we're not buds. I'm just getting you out of this one, and then you're on your own.
Yeah, there is something to be said for the fact that he almost broke the one saving grace of humanity beyond repair, but you kind of get where he's coming from, more or less. And that's not something you can say for most characters who would want to destroy, more or less, the arc of that world.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, just... It's also helped by Darren Korb's amazing music, because basically the way that soundtrack works is there's one singer for the Zia character, and then there's another for Zolf, and the way that they are kind of separated and come together is very well handled in a way that it was one of those situations where, also kind of a first for me, just hearing that the way that they portrayed Zolf, a character with almost no spoken lines, almost entirely through song, kind of made me go, okay, soundtracks can have something that is pretty special sometimes, and that isn't done often, but I'd like to see more of this in the future.
It's also kind of interesting because with Zia, like, you actually hear her singing before you see her on the level where you get her. So, like, her singing is your first introduction to that character. But with Zolf, it's pretty far into his arc that you actually finally hear him, and it makes it pretty different.
Yeah, it's when you finally hear him when he's finally broken down that you finally hear his voice, more or less.
Yeah.
And that is pretty strong thematic connotations, more or less.
So this... mine is going to take a bit longer. Okay. So, overall, from a story perspective, I don't think that Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor was a particularly amazing story game, right? And I think anything that's like some of the most interesting stuff about it is stuff that the game doesn't talk about, but that's kind of why I want to. So the main character of that game is Talion, who is a human ranger, and he's sort of assisted by Celebrimbor, who is the ghost of an elf who helped make the One Ring, which, you know, of course, the One Ring, which is, you know, the source of Sauron's power to an extent, and blah, 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 blah. And their relationship is kind of whatever. Like, they have some, like, you know, like, the ghost is like, you should be more evil, and Talion's like, listen, I'm a dick, but I'm not that much of a dick. Their relationship is not that interesting. The thing that's interesting is their relationship with the orcs, which the game insists on calling them Uruks for copyright reason. Uruk is just orc in fucking black speech, which is, you know, the tongue that they use, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're just orcs. It's a silly, I guess it's just like they're trying to make it, like, stand out in games where orcs are everywhere. Like, no, these ones are Uruks. It's like, well, you're just saying orc in a different language. It's not.
Or the famous Uruk-hai.
Well, it just means orc soldier. So, again, it's just like, yeah, you're drawing this weird line for fucking branding reasons that I understand, but it's also kind of dumb. But the thing that the game doesn't really, like, it seems like they think they get into it, but they don't actually, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, you know, like, you've got this, you know, you've got this wraith power, and you can control orcs through fear. Right?
Yeah.
That's the main mechanic of the game. And there's, like, some orcs seem to be working with you willingly, and they're like, oh, no, you don't need to possess me. I'll help you out. There's some story orcs that are like that.
Ratbag.
Yeah. And then it's like, and then they're the ones that you just, you know, enslave to your will, and sometimes, like, so you brand them, right? That's what the power is called, when you put your hand on them and you're like, bam, you serve me now. And then they sort of just go about their lives until you hit a button to make them your sleeper agents. And it's real weird, you guys. It's in game mechanics, it's very fun. But it's like weird mental slavery, and the game really doesn't get into it that much. And I guess, like, this is more like not me going in with a rant. This is me like, let's have an open discussion about the relationship between this ghost boy and the tons of people he enslaves.
Yeah. It's problematic, seems like a light word for what it is.
It's a lot. I think we can say that, right? So, like, and it's, there's some stuff, like, we could have had this conversation, you know, when the game first came out, and it would just be like, yeah, it seems kind of fucked up, and these people, you know, like, he hits the button, and then they're just slaves to his will, right? But from the coverage we're seeing of the sequel, Middle-Earth: Shadow of War, it gets even more complicated, I think. Because we see less of the sleeper agent stuff, where when you brand a person, they're just normal until you flip a switch and they're yours. Which is fucked. But you see more, like, there's specifically in some of the demos they've shown, like, there's a captain, like an orc captain, damn it, I fell into their garbage again, Jen. And you, like, beat him in a fight, and you brand him, and then the brand ends, and he's like, you know, whatever, like, Dark Lord, Bright Lord, whatever. I don't really care. I just want to fight. And that sort of makes it seem like he's still himself more. Like, it's less...
It's...
that it recontextualizes things in a way that feels both unearned and also still really interesting, and I don't know what to think.
Yeah, I kind of joked when I first saw it. I was like, oh, this is going to be... Warner Brothers take on a visual novel dating game or something like that, but it's a situation where it's definitely, I think they definitely knew that what they did within Shadow of Mordor was kind of wrong, and saying, oh no, they actually, you kind of convinced them more or less, is sort of changing it a bit, but I'd have to see it in the full context of the game itself, more or less, before I gave it a thumbs up, more or less. It's already starting from bad footing, more or less.
For sure. It's weird. I don't know. Like, yeah. I think... Look, I'm excited to play the game anyway, because mechanically I find it really fun. And also, you know, like, this is not a new idea, but it's an idea that bears repeating at basically every corner, is... a lot of the media we consume is problematic, and that doesn't mean we can't consume it. It just means we should really keep that in mind, right?
For sure.
But, like, this sort of, like, I'm not even going to call it a half-hearted course correction, because it seems like a hearted course correction, right? It seems like they're really, like, we can't take this mechanic out of our game. It is... really fun, and it's what we sort of made our thing around. And also, we can't just suddenly pretend this wasn't happening. But, like, what do you do there? Do you, like, is it, like, the first thing is sort of, like, he's like, we need an army, but this time we need them to be smart and also our friends. It's like, do you just pretend that this is what's been happening the whole time? Is it just a retcon where it's like, well, no, what are you talking about? They just, oh, they act like zombies before? That's weird. Whatever. We're friends. We were always friends. That's why you could press down on the D-pad and their heads would explode. Like,
Yeah, maybe they'll just throw in at the very beginning of the game, a montage of last time on, and they'll throw in a quick explanation. Or one of those loading screen, instead of having... The original game did this thing where during loading screens, it would let it, you in on some of the backstory by playing random audio clips from mm-hmm. one of the two main characters. Maybe in this one, they'll just go, oh yeah, it was really neat how we befriended everyone last time, huh? Yeah, it sure worked really well.
Just that, like, that echoey voice coming through your PS4 controller. It's not like we actually mind-controlled them. They were totally cool with it. Yeah, I don't know that I have a conclusion to this one, necessarily. It's just a thing that... It feels really central to that game. To those games, I guess, at this point, right? Sort of, because your main tool for getting anything done is actually not your sword. It's the people who are your puppets. And I am hopeful that they will look into that, but also, like, I actually hope they don't look into it too hard, because I don't think there's any way they take a strong examination of, like, well, let's talk about magical slavery, and it isn't the fucking worst.
Coming from a context of Tolkien itself, orcs in general are kind of super racially charged anyway, so it's really thin ground to walk on either way.
Mm-hmm. It's cool. Orcs are just people that they turned bad. It's okay. They're just people, but they made them bad. That's why their skin is dark. Yeah, it's... Listen. Tolkien was doing a very specific thing, and I think to a certain extent, like, any, like, racism in there is kind of intentional, because he was trying to create, like, a fake myth, and myths have some fucking racism in them. But it's a weird, complicated thing that, boy, that's another podcast, like, not just another podcast episode, that's another fucking show. and we are not informed enough, and we also don't have the time or the inclination for that.
Yeah, I guess in general, I viewed Shadow of Mordor as sort of an Assassin's Creed 1. Like, they came up with a really cool idea with the whole Nemesis system. And the story kind of took a back seat in some ways, just to make that work. It'd be really cool if they ended up going back to some of that during Shadow of War and tweaking things that didn't work so well and maybe fixing a few things, like the orc thing.
And then at the end of it, you're about to fight Sauron, right? And Celebrimbor is like... Now is the time. And Talion's like, what are you talking about? And he says, I'm not talking to you. And he turns to the camera and he says, Desmond, now. yeah, enough. That's... I'm looking forward to that game. I am going to, however, keep a pretty close critical eye on how they treat all that shit.
Yeah, sounds like a good plan.
I think that's it for this episode of Friend Request. If you liked this, you can find more of it on iTunes and also, you know, through RSS and stuff. You could give us a rating or review there. We would really appreciate that. And if you like sort of me and Jen's voices in general, you could go to scanlinemedia.com, where you can find articles and podcasts and even a couple of videos for your time. If you want to support those endeavors, you can go to patreon.com/scanlinemedia and chip in and help us cover more stuff. We get games and equipment that way. We don't spend it on ourselves, just for the site. I want to give a big thank you to Krista Lee for use of her track Hearts Burning Bright off of the album Welcome to the Fantasy Zone. You can find that and also other work of hers at opoorpup.bandcamp.com. It is our intro and outro music, and we are very grateful for it. And until next time, folks, we'll see you.
Have a good evening.